Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
MISD Board to discuss adjusting calendar. Academic year could start in July. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. An earlier start to the school year will be part of the Midland ISD School Board discussion at today's meeting. Superintendent Orlando Riddick told trustees last week at the school board's budget workshop that the Texas Education Agency was working on options for school districts to consider in response to the coronavirus pandemic. One option, according to Riddick, was to start the school year in July and have longer breaks during the school year, including 2 weeks in the fall, during Christmas break, and for spring break. Those breaks could be then used for campuses if coronavirus resulted in a halt to learning at a particular point. It leads into a 6-week summer, he said, and then you rotate into the schedule again. The intersessional calendar is something Midland ISD staff has thought about for the last couple of years, the superintendent said during last week's board workshop. We might have to move that and have an earlier start, knowing that we could have what I call micro closures. Micro closures, he said, is when someone, a staff or student, becomes ill and the district might have to close that building down, and there is a 2-week window before it can reopen. So if you have these intersessional calendars and you have a 2-week closure, you can make that 2 weeks within your calendar, Riddick said. The Houston Chronicle reported last week that officials with the Texas Education Agency believe that school shutdowns caused by the pandemic could have a devastating impact on students and lead to some returning nearly a full year behind what normally occurs. The Chronicle also reported the intersessional calendar would include an earlier start date and a later end date, extended breaks throughout the year, including during winter when COVID-19 may spike, 6 weeks of intersessional breaks that may be used for remediation or enrichment for struggling students, built-in remote learning time and staggered in-person attendance, and spread out school days into the summer to minimize loss of learning. Classes would be held in 11 out of 12 months. The article and Riddick both mentioned that House Bill 3 includes an additional day's school year incentive with formula funding for school districts to add up to 30 instructional days for elementary schools. Those 30 additional days may be included in the intersessional calendar and can also be used in an option summer learning period model or a full year redesign model that would include daily schedule changes. Riddick said he shared a 180-day calendar with MISD leaders at a previous school board meeting when leaders approved the current calendar. Riddick said last week, "There is a benefit to the longer calendar with more school days because of the additional funding that the state would give you." RRC. Permits drop nearly 30% from March to April. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. The decline in the number of permits in the Midland region dropped by nearly 30% month over month in April, according to the Railroad Commission of Texas. The decline continued the downward trend as permits to drill new oil or gas holes in the region fell from 520 in January to 375 in March to 263 in April. Across the state, the number of permits has fallen from 1,041 in January to 416 in April. No other district had more than 40, according to the RRC. Not only did the Midland District dominate in terms of permits, but it also was tops in new oil completions and new gas completions. In April, the Midland District accounted for 403 of the 872 new oil completions around the state. The next closest district was the San Antonio area with 121. Midland's 105 new gas completions were nearly half of the 215 around the state. The next closest district was the 33 in Refugio area. Across the state, the RRC reported issuing 456 original drilling permits in April. That was about 450 fewer than April 2019. The April total included 416 permits to drill new oil or gas wells, 2 to re-enter plugged oil well bores, and 27 for recompletions of existing well bores. The breakdown of well types for original drilling permits in April 2020 is 97 oil, 15 gas, 311 oil or gas, 15 injection, and 18 other permits. In April 2020, Commission staff processed 981 oil, 246 gas, and 249 injection completions for new wells, reentries, and recompletions, compared to 593 oil, 143 gas, and 36 injection completions in April 2019. Total well completions processed for 2020 year to date for new drills, reentries, and recompletions are 5,285, compared to 3,244 recorded during the same time period in 2019. Midland still dealing with CRMWD 1966 contract. Take-or-pay cost city money during water plant rehab. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. The Midland City Council's conversations last week about water also had to do with its relationship with the Colorado River Municipal Water District. More specifically, discussions surrounded the deal made in 1966 that the city must abide through 2030, according to Carl Crago, City Utilities Director. Midland is a CRMWD customer and not a member, said Crago, told the Reporter-Telegram that Midland dropped its membership status in order to keep control of water purchased in Winkler County, the T-Bar Ranch. However, in 1966, the deal with the CRMWD spelled out the minimum daily average of water that Midland must take through 2030, take or pay, as Crago called it. The amount this fiscal year will be about 16.3 million gallons a day. By 2030, that amount climbs to 17.5 million gallons. Reaching the required amount hasn't always been an issue. Heading into the drought of 2011, Midlanders were using 42 million gallons a day. The concerns of Midlanders' use of water were so great that it forced a few changes. First, the Midland City Council put together rate increases and water restrictions meant to drop the amount of usage across the city. As it turned out, the amount used by Midlanders dropped to an average of about $18.5 million gallons. Second, city and community leaders put together one of the largest public works projects in the city's history. The 67-mile pipeline to T-Bar Ranch in Winkler County allowed the city to connect the T-Bar and Clearwater ranches and guaranteed a new water source for Midland. The Midland City Council unanimously voted on Tuesday to purchase another water source near Fort Stockton in Pecos County. Midland City leaders mentioned the current deal with the CRMWD during talks about purchasing water from Fort Stockton Holdings. More than one council member has said the purchase would help the city in its next negotiations with the CRMWD when the current contract expires in 2030. Also, part of the discussion on Tuesday was that for the last couple of years, Midland had to pay penalties for not reaching the total amount of water required in the city's deal with CRMWD. Crago said the city has been impacted by limited use, and the city's water plant has been under construction during the majority of the last 2 years, basically cutting off half the plant during that time. Crago said the plant can handle 32 million gallons a day when fully operational. He also said that the city has not always able to run the half left open, which made reaching the 16.3 million gallon requirement tough to accomplish. This is why council members heard last week that the city was paying CRMWD for water not used as part of the key take-or-pay system. Crago said the plant is fully operational now, and there shouldn't be any problems this fiscal year for the city to live up to its obligations. He said the city wants to make sure that it is abiding by its contract. The preference is to use the CRMWD's surface water over the city's underground water options from T-Bar Clearwater or the Paul Davis wellfields north of Midland. Crago said there could be a reason for the city to tap into its connection with T-Bar and Clearwater. During the summer, Midlanders will surpass its requirement for CRMWD, possibly up to 31 million gallons. He said 25 million gallons a day is more likely this summer, even with lifted restrictions and a lower price for using a larger amount, something the council might approve as soon as next month. Crago also said a section of Midland, including the University of Texas Permian Basin's Midland campus, uses water only from the T-Bar pipeline. Some days that is 3 million to 5 million gallons, just for that western area of Midland. While not a member city, there likely always will be a relationship between the city of Midland and the Colorado River Municipal Water District. He said there actually are two contracts between the entities. One is the take-or-pay contract, already addressed. The other allows Midland to get another 13 million gallons a day because of its contribution to building the dam that created Lake Ivy. A lot of the conversation will be to use Ivy and not use take-or-pay. As for the purchase from Fort Stockton Holdings, he said a 10-year time frame to build a pipeline that connects with the T-Bar water source is a possibility. The timing of a new pipeline might depend on the council's sense of urgency and on obtaining right-of-way. Crago's words were consistent with comments made during Tuesday's meeting. Still, for 10 years, rates with Fort Stockton Holdings are lower as to provide Midland, Abilene, and San Angelo the opportunity for a holding period and determine a best practice for delivery. Sunflower RX works directly with physicians and patients. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. Pharmacist Brian Meyer has been serving the local community for 26 years. He and his wife, Shavronica, earlier this year opened Sunflower RX to help provide generic medications at low and affordable prices for patients without insurance or discount plans. The couple decided to open Sunflower RX after discussing how much prescription medicine can cost people. We want to provide affordable medications to everyone, especially those without insurance, Brian said. Even those with insurance, we can often charge them less than their copays. He said that many people don't quite understand the pharmacy yet because there aren't many U.S. pharmacies that operate by this model. I don't think many people in the area know about what a cash-based type pharmacy is, he said. Meyer said the pharmacy, which opened in January, has seen more clients with the oil price crash and pandemic, especially with people getting laid off from work. They're becoming uninsured because insurance is tied to your employer, so now people are having to look for cheaper alternatives. Sunflower RX is licensed in multiple states, including Arizona, Utah, and Alaska, where they can ship medications, and is working on getting licensed in more states as well. Meyer said the pharmacy is able to fill prescriptions for 3 months, which has been a suggestion during the pandemic, instead of the usual 1 month supply that is a rule by insurance companies. They, the patients, have that option, and that certainly helps everybody, especially during this time, because they don't have to come back every month and put themselves at risk. Initially, Meyer wanted to open a mail-order-only pharmacy, said his wife, Sunflower's retail manager and technician. They found a storefront in the Bank of America building in downtown Odessa that proved to be a good place for a pharmacy, as well as a place to sell gifts and snack food. We love the people in the building, she said. Some of them come down every day and buy the same thing. It has been easier not working with insurance companies to provide affordable medication, says Brian, who also is making hand sanitizer using alcohol that the pharmacy sells. We can actually do what a pharmacy is supposed to do, not just fighting with an insurance company all day over prior authorizations and if they will decide to cover medicine or not. We can just fill it and work with the patient and the physician. Midland ISD athletic facilities could get nearly $10 million in improvements. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Capital improvement projects that are part of the superintendent's and board's priorities in the next Midland ISD budget are likely to include more than $9.6 million in athletic facility upgrades. The Midland ISD board heard Wednesday during its first budget workshop in 2020 of improvements that will continue the rebuilding of athletic facilities inside the district. Those improvements include $1.534 million for synthetic turf for football game fields at Midland ISD Freshman High School, $1.066 million for synthetic turf for varsity softball fields, $2.915 million for synthetic turf for baseball game fields, $1.350 million to upgrade lighting for athletic fields, and $2.765 million for four-lane athletic tracks at all junior highs and freshman schools except San Jacinto Junior High. The athletic facility improvements were 72.6% of the $13.261 million in capital improvements that are part of the superintendent and board priorities for the 2020-21 school year. Other capital improvements were $1.629 million for reverse osmosis drinking water systems for all secondary campuses and $2 million for a public address system intercom upgrade for secondary schools. The board appeared to be in agreement about the needs for athletic facility improvements. Trustee Robert Marquez said the turf fields will help the district save on its water bill and upkeep costs for caring for those facilities. Trustee Brian Murray said that the district's investment in better facilities will allow booster clubs to use its money on other items. Midland ISD installed artificial turf football / soccer fields at its four junior high schools, Alamo, Abel, San Jac, and Goddard, in 2019. The cost of installation is $2.7 million, according to the district. Superintendent Orlando Riddick also said that by addressing all facilities, the district is being equitable for all sports, not just allowing a school or sport to have better facilities because it has more involvement from a booster club or sponsor. Riddick also said that capital improvement projects also check off boxes that would have been taken care of had voters passed the $569 million bond in November. Athletic facilities and the PA system were part of that bond package, according to the district's plan that remains online. Board members asked about whether fine arts needed to be on the priorities list. Riddick said the district has done a tremendous job on the fine arts side, increasing budgets. He also complimented FMH Foundation for its support of the district's fine arts program. Riddick did say he would talk to Deb Shaw, director of fine arts for the district, about what could be added. Capital improvements overall made up about a third of the $37.488 million in superintendent and board priorities. Other items include 5 activity buses for $1.25 million, 10 buses for $1.1 million, and $1 million for COVID-19 expenses.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, May 18th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Teacher Resignations, Retirements Fall Behind 2019 Pace," by Stuart Doreen. The number of teachers announcing their resignations and retirements are behind the pace set through May of last year. The school district reports in its agenda packet for today's board meeting that 53 teachers and staff members handed in their resignations and another 13 are retiring. That brings the total to 129, 107 resignations and 22 retirements between March and May. There were 170 departures announced just in May 2019. The board May 2019 agenda packet shows 134 resignations and 36 retirements for that month. May 2019 helped make up the ground lost in the early months, as a total of 5 departures were announced in March and April. Still, heading into June of this year, Midland ISD will be able to show year-over-year improvements in teacher retention, with 175 departures in 2019 compared to 129 this year. That is a 26% decrease year-over-year heading into the summer months. Retention of teachers has been a goal of the district in recent years. At the end of the 2018-19 school year, Midland ISD reported a 9.6% decrease in the total number of resignations and retirements compared to 2017-18. The number of resignations and retirements moved from fewer than 400 in both 2015-16 and 2016-17 to 491 in 2017-18 to 444 last school year. The 66 resignations and retirements this month are also lower than the 88 total in 2018, 66 resignations and 22 retirements. In May 2017, Midland ISD reported 46 total. By the time the Reporter Telegram had an opportunity to look at the agenda posted online, the Midland ISD Communications Department had closed for the weekend. Administrators turning in their resignations included Goddard Junior High Principal Brandy Copeland. Retirements came from Travis Elementary Principal Linda Silvas and Chief Facilities Officer James Riggin. This article is entitled, "MISD Administrator Provides Sample of Flexible Calendar." New calendar starts school on August 3rd, provides 7 vacation weeks, 9 other student holidays, by Stuart Doreen. Weeks after Midland board leaders approved a calendar for the 2020-21 school year, Midland ISD staff wants to circle back around for another discussion of optional calendars. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick told trustees during their budget workshop last week that a discussion would take place Monday. The agenda packet for today's school board meeting offers more detail, including a plan used by Socorro ISD, which was a template for the district's intersessional draft. Monday's virtual meeting is set to begin at 5:30 p.m. The district's website has information about how to provide comment for those who want to weigh in on calendar changes. The intersessional calendar is listed as part of the district reports and does not include a vote. A district report in the agenda packet indicates staff approach the board with optional calendars. Staff would like to circle back around for another discussion and to provide a sample of how a flexible calendar can both support student learning and the possibility of closure, all the while maintaining required 75,600 student minutes and 187 teacher workdays, according to a memo prepared by Jill Rivera, Executive Director of Professional Development. This type of calendar also transitioned us to a 9-week reporting period. We are currently in 6-week reporting periods. Riddick told the board last week that this calendar offers student intercessions, which can allow for a 10-day closure if that were necessary. Those days, according to Rivera's report, also allows the district to use those days off to provide remediation, to reteach and provide small group instruction to target off-track students during week one of each intercession. This would be supplemental pay for teachers during week one of the intercessions, Rivera said. Should closure occur, we would have the flexibility to move the intercession to accommodate closure and still stay on track with the minutes requirement. Rivera also referenced House Bill 3 that supports additional funding for districts that choose to build a calendar that is 180 days plus up to 30 additional days. Riddick also had mentioned this extension during last week's board budget workshop. Midland ISD's intercessional draft resembles the calendar from Socorro ISD, which is in the El Paso area. Riddick, who grew up in El Paso, mentioned the Socorro model during that budget workshop discussion last week. Midland ISD's draft includes teachers report on July 27th for professional development. School starts August 3rd. 2-week school closure from October 5th to the 16th. A full week off for Thanksgiving. 2 weeks off for Christmas, December 21st to January 3rd. 2 weeks off in the spring, March 8th to 19th. Student holidays on September 7th, October 19th, November 11th, January 4th and 5th, January 18th, March 22nd, April 2nd, and May 31st. School ends on June 3rd and graduation on June 4th. The Socorro model starts the 2021-22 process over during the last week of July 2021. Summer also becomes an intercession. For Midland ISD, June 7th through July 30th would be dedicated for summer remediation, summer support, summer enrichment, testing, etc. The current school calendar calls for an August 19th start, May 27th to 28th graduations, and last day of school, May 28th. There is no 2-week break in the fall and only 1 week for spring break. This article is entitled MISD, Providing Cell Towers Could Increase Wi-Fi Access, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD has nearly $5 million in their first draft of the 2020-21 budget dedicated for digital services for students and teachers. And Superintendent Orlando Riddick said last week that the investment likely will not stop there. The effort to push the classroom experience beyond MISD's building has exposed the community's technological shortcomings, specifically out in the county. The district has tried hotspots, purchasing more than 1,000, and turned its school buses into Wi-Fi delivery vehicles. But Riddick said during the school board's meeting Wednesday that what is needed is cell phone towers. He said the right combination for more access is hooking students up with the right type of devices, which will be tablets for kindergartners through second graders and laptops for students in third through 12th grade, and the ability to access the internet. Paying for that Wi-Fi push. To make the virtual classroom more reliable and more accessible, Riddick told the board of two options. The first is a partnership with the city and county to bring Wi-Fi, specifically Wi-Fi 6, to more people and inside more buildings. He also said that the district has to think even bigger, including the purchase of a cell phone tower or Wi-Fi tower. He said that strategy has been employed by smaller districts. He also said he and MISD staff had meetings planned with districts outside the state he mentioned Indiana and Arizona, to see what other districts are contemplating. He said instead of using hotspot devices and the monthly fee which comes with them, the district could get a tower and the coverage area they bring. As far as the laptops and tablets, Riddick said he expects those will be ready in January. He said it was important to make sure devices could meet the capacity of what we're building logistically, and that means pushing Wi-Fi 6, which current laptops aren't able to do. This article is entitled, MISD, Providing Cell Towers Could Increase Wi-Fi Access, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD has nearly $5 million in their first draft of the 2020-21 budget dedicated for digital services for students and teachers. And Superintendent Orlando Riddick said last week that the investment likely will not stop there. The effort to push the classroom experience beyond MISD's building has exposed the community's technological shortcomings, specifically out in the county. The district has tried hotspots, purchasing more than 1,000, and turned its school buses into Wi-Fi delivery vehicles. But Riddick said during the school board's meeting Wednesday that what is needed is cell phone towers. He said the right combination for more access is hooking students up with the right type of devices, which will be tablets for kindergartners through second graders, and laptops for students in third through 12th grade, and the ability to access the internet. Paying for that Wi-Fi push. To make the virtual classroom more reliable and more accessible, Riddick told the board of two options. The first is a partnership with the city and county to bring Wi-Fi, specifically Wi-Fi 6, to more people and inside more buildings. He also said that the district has to think even bigger, including the purchase of a cell phone tower or Wi-Fi tower. He said that strategy has been employed by smaller districts. He also said he and MISD staff had meetings planned with districts outside the state, he mentioned Indiana and Arizona, to see what other districts are contemplating. He said instead of using hotspot devices and the monthly fee which comes with them, the district could get a tower and the coverage area they bring. As far as the laptops and tablets, Riddick said he expects those will be ready in January. He said it was important to make sure devices could meet the capacity of what we're building logistically, and that means pushing Wi-Fi 6, which current laptops aren't able to do.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, May 18th. Ideas to Cope in Difficult Times by Eliana Brito with Samaritan Counseling Center. We all encounter struggles and times in our lives that may be difficult to handle. There are coping strategies that may be helpful in keeping you mentally healthy and making these times more manageable. Relaxation techniques, such as deep breathing and listening to calm music, can help ease anxiety and help relax you. Mindfulness allows you to ground yourself and be in the present moment to help give clarity and decrease stress. Meditation or prayer can also be a very powerful part of coping and alleviating negative thoughts and emotions. It is also important to practice self-care, as we often forget to take care of our basic needs while dealing with difficult situations. Self-care can include eating nutritious foods, sleeping well, making time for yourself, exercising, taking care of your hygiene, and staying connected with others. Having a support system is crucial for our mental health, and therefore it is important to reach out to others for emotional support, especially during these difficult times. As we continue to face the COVID-19 pandemic, it may be difficult to adjust to changes from our normal lives and the emotions associated. It is crucial to be aware of how you are coping and realize that it is understandable to have more challenges coping through these difficult circumstances compared to other life stressors. If you feel that you are having a hard time coping, do not be afraid to reach out for help. You are not alone, and it is okay to accept support from others. If Samaritan Counseling Center can be of assistance, please contact us at 432-563-4144. We are currently offering telehealth counseling. Man, woman charged in fatal shooting of teen. The Odessa Police Department detailed in a press release that a 21-year-old man and a 20-year-old woman were arrested after they were reportedly involved in the fatal shooting of a 17-year-old man in central Odessa. Desmond Tuggle, age 21, and Destiny Barrera, age 20, were each charged with murder, a first-degree felony. The reported fatal shooting happened around 10:10 p.m. Saturday in the 1100 block of North Jackson Avenue, an OPD press release detailed. Officers reportedly made contact with a 17-year-old man with a gunshot wound. Odessa Police Department spokesperson Corporal Steve LeSwear said during a phone call on Sunday afternoon that the 17-year-old has been identified as Osvaldo Renteria. The 17-year-old was transported to a local hospital, and he was later pronounced dead by medical personnel. Investigation showed Renteria had made contact with the occupants of a black Dodge Nitro, who were later identified as Tuggle and Barrera, the press release detailed. The driver of the Dodge Nitro shot the 17-year-old in the upper body before fleeing north on Jackson Avenue at a high rate of speed. During the investigation, the suspects were reportedly identified as Tuggle and Barrera. OPD located both on Sunday morning in West Odessa. Tuggle and Barrera were arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Tuggle and Barrera were both booked into jail on Sunday afternoon, and bonds have not yet been set, jail records show. The investigation continues. Next of kin were notified. West 42nd Street reconstruction starts. County commences other jobs in 20-year transportation plan. The story was written by Bob Campbell. West 42nd Street is getting a long-needed overhaul, only 1.9 miles from Farm to Market Road 1936 to FM 866, and it's not just the usual seal coating, which wouldn't last long with the heavy-duty oil field traffic of recent years. It is a complete, from-the-ground-up industrial-grade revamping that should be good for 10 to 15 years. That's according to Ector County Highways and Streets Department Director Evan Kessy, who says the COVID-19-related decrease in traffic is having the benefit of enabling work crews to get a lot more done in the daytime. Danny's Asphalt Paving of Odessa began Monday on the $2.5 million West 42nd Street contract, along with the $1.5 million job of widening of West Pawpaw Street, west from U.S. 385 to Ruby Avenue, with a 24-foot-wide two-lane roadway getting new 6-foot shoulders. West 42nd is being broadened with a new center lane for turning and entering into traffic. Quote, "The decrease in traffic is letting us do much more," said Kessy, who has 34 employees and has been authorized for 14 more. Quote, "We're changing the whole pavement to industry standards in order to withstand the traffic. It will have whole new material on top," end quote. Kessy said the contract will probably take about 5 months to finish. Financed by the 1.25-cent sales tax approved by the voters in November 2018, other recent projects have entailed resurfacing 2 miles of West Dunn Street from FM 1936 to Tripp Avenue and Fortune 500 and Damascus Avenues from West 3rd Street to University Boulevard. Stephen Road was resurfaced from West Loop 338 to North County Road West, along with the pothole-ridden 4,411-foot Stoner Road between Stephen and North County Road West. It's also part of the 20-year plan okayed by County Commissioners last September 10th to take 6 to 8 months to repave and extend West 3rd from Fortune 500 Avenue to 866 and repave East Cottonwood Road from 385 east to the Midland County line. The cost for those two projects last fall was projected at $800,000 to $1.2 million each. But Kessie and the commissioners were greatly encouraged when the West 42nd low bid came in much lower than the originally forecast $6 million to $7 million, which they said would let the county get a lot more done. Commissioner Greg Simmons, whose Precinct 2 encompasses eastern and northeastern Ector County, said roads and streets in Gardendale and streets in the Ponderosa Estates residential housing development north of 56th Street in the Crossroads Fellowship area will be refurbished. Quote, "It's not like West Odessa, but we have some heavily trafficked streets in Gardendale that are getting beaten up pretty badly," Simmons said. "In the Ponderosa Estates, it will be more of a scheduled maintenance with fixing potholes and filling in where the edges are starting to crumble off." Quote, "The contractors are not as busy as they used to be, so there were a lot more trying to win the bids," end quote. With jurisdiction over the southeast side of the county, Commissioner Armando Rodriguez said his Precinct 4 is third in priority behind Precinct 2 and Commissioner Eddie Shelton's Precinct 1, which is the northern and western parts. Commissioner Dale Childers' Precinct 3 covers most of the city of Odessa. Rodriguez said he is greatly relieved to be getting his multitudinous potholes filled, and it is gratifying finally to be addressing West Pawpaw, where the wider shoulders will quit making motors stop in the roadway to let others turn. Quote, "The county built Pawpaw 20 or 25 years ago because the only way to get to Pleasant Farms was on West Apple Street," he said. "We have the people of the county to thank for giving us the sales tax. If we didn't have it, we wouldn't have the rare opportunity to use contractors instead of having to do all the paving ourselves," end quote. The county has the responsibility of maintaining 552 miles of paved roads and 32 miles of caliche and unpaved roads. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 114. Ector County negative, 1,588 out of 1,830 tested, with 128 pending. 4 deaths. Midland County, 120 confirmed cases out of 2,284 tested, 12 deaths. Texas, 47,784 confirmed cases with 693,276 tested. Total Texas deaths, 1,336. U.S. cases, 1,524,150 total confirmed cases and 90,895 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TCTRJLF. Volunteers needed. CASA appointed Special Advocates for Children, or CASA, are in need of volunteers. Application deadline is May 25th. Apply at casawtx.org. Volunteers are essential for the organization. A CASA volunteer is an adult over the age of 21 who volunteers their time and talent to advocate for child abuse victims. When a child is removed from their home because of severe abuse and neglect and placed in foster care, a judge will appoint a CASA volunteer to advocate for that child's best interest. Once appointed to a child's case, a CASA volunteer will gather information and become familiar with the child's background. A CASA volunteer visits with the child on a regular basis and develops a relationship with the child. They ensure the child's needs are met while the child is in foster care. For more information, call Hope Stalder at 683-1114, extension 16, or email hopes@casawtx.org. Counseling. Centers for Children and Families at 3701 Andrews Highway in Midland is currently waiving an assessment fee for all new clients through the month of May and is offering two free sessions to all health care workers and first responders battling COVID-19 on the front line. New clients are welcomed. To make an appointment, call 580-7006 in Odessa or 570-1084 in Midland. For more information, visit www.centerstx.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, May 18th, 2020. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled Guest View. Nursing homes need to take steps before reopening to visitors. From the Dallas Morning News. As of last week, Texas's 374 registered nursing homes have seen 1,332 cases of coronavirus, with 478 resulting deaths among residents and staff. This accounts for 43% of all coronavirus deaths in the state, a sobering reminder of the vulnerabilities seniors face both from age and the communal life of a nursing home. Data we gathered from multiple sources, including the New York Times, AARP, and the Kaiser Family Foundation, demonstrate just how serious the problem is, including the number of nursing home deaths make up anywhere from 25% to 50% of all U.S. COVID-19 deaths. The numbers, while imprecise, make it clear that we must focus greater attention on protecting people living in nursing care centers. As we look ahead to when the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services will release guidelines for reopening nursing homes to visitors, the facilities must proceed with the highest level of caution, even as they grapple with the surety that residents and family members want and need greater contact with one another. First, clear and consistent infection control policies need to account for COVID-19 specific procedures. The Texas Department of Health and Human Services Commission mandates that these type of facilities have infection control policies, but we know staff do not always receive proper training or act in accordance with that training when they get it. NPR reported this week that more than one-third of nursing home facilities do not adhere to correct hand-washing procedures, and one-quarter do not use personal protective equipment appropriately. Responsibility lies first and foremost with nursing home owners, who must ensure that their staff are trained and equipped to handle care for patients and hygiene for themselves. Testing must also be ubiquitous in nursing homes. Governor Greg Abbott announced May 11th that all residents and staff in nursing homes should be tested, a critical step before reopening to outside visitors can occur. Nursing homes must also be transparent about the number of cases reported in their facilities and be prepared to pause outside visitation as necessary. On Tuesday, Texas Healthcare Association President and CEO Kevin Warren responded to the governor's statement on testing, saying he was glad nursing homes would now receive priority. But he noted that as testing increases, the need for personal protective equipment and trained staff will also rise. He called on the state's legislative budget board to improve a funding request submitted by Health and Human Services to make resources more easily available. The legislative budget board should consider funding this request, as nursing homes are in dire need of support in the battle against the coronavirus, and because the homes can so quickly become disease vectors for the broader public. We yearn for the time when we will be able to see our loved ones in nursing homes again. But until we can assure that homes have the best protocols, training, and equipment available, we must stick to video and phone calls, emails, and letters as our means of communication. We need to move forward as quickly as possible. Health is not simply physical. It is also spiritual and emotional. Health requires human connection, touch, and support for residents in nursing homes who now, as much as ever, are suffering feelings of isolation and loneliness.
Hello, this is Michael reading Dear Abby for Monday, May 18th. Parents struggle to do what's best for a tormented daughter. Dear Abby, my 53-year-old daughter is an addict. First it was alcohol, then hard drugs and opioids. This has been going on and off for 40 years. She hit bottom recently. She became homeless and ended up in a women's shelter in another state. She says she's been clean about 6 months. The shelter helped her find a place to live, and she draws a disability check, so she has everything she needs. She constantly contacts me and her father saying she wants to come home. We have helped her to the point of mental, physical, and financial exhaustion, and we just can't go there again. It's the most difficult thing we've ever gone through. We know we shouldn't continue to enable her, but if we don't, we feel like terrible parents. Any advice would be much appreciated. Terrible parents in Indiana. Dear parents, you already know what will happen if you cave into your daughter's begging to come home. From now on, when she asks, remind her that she already is home, in the place the people from the shelter helped her to find. Her troubles have nothing to do with you. They are the result of the life she created for herself. You already know that enabling her hasn't worked. The time has come for you and your husband to take better care of yourselves. Dear Abby, my ex-wife and I separated after 56 years of marriage. I recently found out she had been raped twice. The first was somebody I worked around at the airbase. The second was by her father, to teach her a lesson for getting raped the first time. When I asked her about it, she said it was none of my business because it happened before we met, but I think she should have told me. I worked around the first guy. Who knows what he told the other airmen behind my back? I also asked very personal questions of her dad, which I now regret. My question is, was she right, or should she have told me? Upset person in the East. Dear upset person, I doubt that the person who worked with you on the airbase would have spent much time bragging about having raped, so please stop obsessing about what the person might have said. That your wife was raped later by her own father must have been devastating. Both of the animals who abused her belonged in jail. That said, although your wife probably should have told you what happened to her, she was not obligated to do so. Your marriage is over. Let it go. Dear Abby, with the stay-at-home order still in place in many states, takeout or delivery is the only option for nights when we don't want to cook. How much should we be tipping the people who deliver our food? With sites like Grubhub, which offer free delivery, do these drivers, deliverers get paid? I feel bad for someone coming to my house and leaving a bag of food on my doorstep, and I want to make sure they are compensated. How much would be a reasonable tip? Likes my delivery. Dear Likes, the Grubhub website recommends a $5 or 20% tip, whichever is greater. When you tip, the money goes straight to the delivery drivers, as it should. Some orders may include an additional delivery fee, but it is not a tip, and drivers don't receive that money, so make sure not to deduct it from the amount of your tip.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Taurus and a moon in Aries. Happy birthday for Monday, May 18, 2020. Committed and idealistic, you are driven to many successes this year. Your challenge is to give more time to your personal life and to your own self. Financially, you do well. If single, you are increasingly sought after and can find your true mate this year. If attached, you and your partner are busy creating the perfect life together. Take some time off just for romance. Gemini loves it when you laugh. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. You will be energized today. Expect to feel more enthusiastic and motivated. You assume a new aura of authority and can act in a leadership capacity. Success is linked to your talent for adapting to your environment. Tonight, outdoor exercise invigorates and revitalizes you. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Listen to inner guidance to tap into your creativity. You are kindly disposed to someone in need and will extend help and advice. Make sure your efforts are wanted and appreciated, though, before going to a great deal of trouble. Tonight, do not push yourself too hard. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. Old friends remember you with an unexpected call or visit through Zoom. You become more active in a club or an organization. An intriguing acquaintance comes from another ethnic or socioeconomic group. Tonight, opt for new rather than the tried and true. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. It is best to postpone innovations at work. Tradition is upheld today. Older or more experienced people offer the best advice and examples. Cope by analyzing repeated patterns and verifying instructions. Tonight, check in on an elderly female family member. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. Today is a marvelous time for writing. If you have an idea for a story or poem, put it on paper. You can change the lives of others for the better in sharing your knowledge and ideas. You use different vocabulary. Tonight, play it away. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. A reflective and secretive mood develops today. A friend or coworker shares a confidence. This draws you into a project requiring discretion. You will have new insights into the desires and motivations of others. Research goes well, too. Tonight, a renewed empathy with children. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Justice is important in all your relationships. Connect first and foremost with people you admire and who support you. There can be differences in spiritual beliefs and values with some associates. Do not try to change them. Tonight, acceptance helps you avoid confrontation. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. You clear away debris and get organized today. You create a wholesome environment in which to work. Natural healing techniques, perhaps involving herbs and music, are helpful. If you help a coworker with a confusing situation, your efforts will be remembered later. Tonight, early bedtime. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Your creative talent earns admiration. A love affair is sparked, if you are receptive. An old love remembers you and could try to rekindle a flame. A lighter workload leaves extra time to enjoy music, reading, or a movie. Tonight, go for close and intimate. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. Family members take an interest in your professional success. You can relax. There is a feeling of reprieve from demanding realities and pressures. Companions are less critical and more supportive of your ideas. They can offer hopeful inspiration. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. You communicate with charm and clarity today. A neighbor is kind and helpful. Take note of new ideas that leap into your thoughts. They can be invaluable if developed in the future. Tonight, catch up with a sibling or an old pal. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. There is a yearning for more spending power and cash flow. Extra work that promises to compensate you well is very attractive. Clip coupons and comparison shop for the best prices when making purchases. Tonight, beware of impulsive shopping sprees. Born today, ballerina Margot Fonteyn, 1919, baseballer Reggie Jackson, 1946, comedian Tina Fey, 1970.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.